Let's cross over live now to a speech being given by Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement. Let's listen.
Just days ago, we saw in occupied Palestine, we saw that the Israeli government was conducting drills in the home front. The drills were called Turning Point 8. Turning Point 8. 8 in 2015. Now, after the July 2006 war, after they evaluated the situation and all the Israelis agreed, meaning nobody in Israel said that they were victorious in that war. Of course, in Lebanon, we have people who say that Israel achieved victory, but in Israel, nobody says they achieved victory in that war. They say they failed, they were defeated, they broke, etc. If you recall, they put together a committee and they evaluated, and from that time, they discovered that no, in the July 2006 war, there was something new in the equation, which was called the targeting of the home front of the enemy. Most of the time, all the time, or most of the time, the home front was never targeted in the wars. Israel's wars were always in our territories. However, in the July 2006 war, and after that in the Gaza wars, no, the war also reached the home front of the enemy, the Palestinian territory occupied by the enemy. Therefore, the enemy was obliged to conduct the home front drills, a simulation of missiles landing in Haifa and the central regions and the south. What should they do? The hospitals, the roads, the schools, the marketplaces, the airports, the ports. So therefore, they put together these drills. On the occasion of this particular drill, of course, they conduct it every year. They didn't conduct it last year, they conducted it this year, maybe because they have disagreements regarding the budget. On the occasion of the drills, Israeli military and political officials, some of them came out and threatened to attack Lebanon. They threatened with destruction, with displacing. One of the Israelis spoke about forcing 1.5 million people to be, Lebanese people to be displaced. First of all, I want to comment on these statements. First, this is part of the psychological warfare. It's part of the psychological war, which we have gotten used to ever since this entity was established, since before 1948. And in 1948, one of the weapons of the enemy to inflict defeat on the countries and the armies of the regions, countries, and the defeat of the regional countries was this, the psychological war. That's nothing new. Second, they are coming and saying, we will destroy and we will turn you back and we will do this and we will force people, hundreds of thousands or 1.5 people, to be displaced. What's new here? This entity, ever since it was established, it has been based on killing, destruction, displacement, massacres. That's the enemy. So the Israelis are repeating themselves. Now, it's good that they're reminding the Lebanese people and the people of the region, reminding them that there is an enemy called Israel, and this is its nature. They're not trying to change their nature. They're not even trying to normalize. That's the hostile, terrorist nature of the Israelis, and they are expressing this or reflecting this in these statements. Number three, I say to the Israelis, you know that the situation has changed. It's no longer like it was in previous decades. And proof of this is these drills. Why are you conducting drills in the home front after July 2006 war? Because you discovered that you are an army that was defeated. You are an army that can be defeated. And you are an entity. When you attack, you will witness a response. And in your home front, right in the very depth of your home front. For this reason, you are conducting these drills. You are issuing threats, and at the same time, you're holding drills in your home front, which is a confession, a complete confession, that the resistance has capabilities that can target all of these areas in which these drills are taking place. Number four, the time, not now, this era ended before 2000, and specifically it ended in 2006 and also in the Gaza wars, the era when Israel could destroy our houses, and at the same time, while its houses remain safe, this era has ended, the era where it could destroy our infrastructure and nothing be done to its infrastructure. This era has ended, the era where it could force our inhabitants to flee or be displaced and its inhabitants stay in their houses. This era has ended. It ended in 2006, but what is coming is even bigger on this level and on other levels. And very clearly, I say to those Israelis that if you are threatening to force 1.5 billion Lebanese people to be displaced, the Islamic resistance in Lebanon threatens to force millions of Israelis to be displaced. Millions of Israelis will be displaced in the upcoming war if it is imposed on Lebanon. That is something clear, it's decisive, and the leaders of the enemy know it, and the people of the enemy know it, the Israeli people. So this empty talk, these threats will not lead anywhere, will not change anything at all. You know that we do not fear your war, not to mention your threats. And now, if you assume that we are preoccupied with Syria and Qalamun and the Arsal Barrens and elsewhere, if you assume that this could change something regarding the conflict with the Israeli enemy, we said on more than one occasion, this doesn't change anything. No, on the contrary, this must make you more fearful, it must make you more concerned. Anyway, I say to the Lebanese people, do not listen to these threats. We know that they do not have any effect on your will and your determination in any way whatsoever. This is part of the high voice which expresses the anxiety of the enemy, the fear of the enemy. It's part of the weapons of the deterrence used by the enemy in confronting the resistance, because the enemy fears the resistance and because the enemy believes in the capabilities of the resistance more than some others believe in it. This is the first main topic. I will go very quickly so that we can take advantage of all the available time. The second main point is that related to Arsal and also Qalamun. Over the past few weeks, we have an issue which has been raised strongly in Lebanon, be it in the media outlets or on the ground or in the political meetings or on the table of the Lebanese cabinet. This issue is that of the Arsal village and the Arsal outskirts and the occupation of this territory by the terrorist groups, and also what the Lebanese, what they should do, the people of Biqa and especially the people of Baalbek and Hirmil, the inhabitants of Baalbek and Hirmil. Some stances were made, we spoke, others spoke, there were reactions, there were comments made, and now we have developments on the battlefield. I want to take a stop, look into this matter because of its importance. First of all, regarding the village, we were clear, especially in the speech I made in Nabatiyeh on Liberation Day, the celebrating the liberation of Lebanon. I differentiated between the village of Arsal and its outskirts. I spoke about our people, our brothers in Arsal. Today, I would like to stress also despite the fact that what I said on Sunday was clear. But regardless, today I would like to stress that we were not thinking and we were not planning, and nobody, none of us, no member of Hezbollah said that we want to enter the Arsal village. Let anyone come, show me a decision, a statement, a declaration, a speech. We always said that this village is occupied by the Takfiri groups and that the responsibility of liberating this village and retaking it and saving it and its inhabitants is the responsibility of the state and the Lebanese army. And we are people of the country and we know the unique nature in the country, especially in the Biqa. And we didn't say any of this. Yes, regarding the outskirts of Arsal, we were clear. We were very clear. Now, what happened from then until now? And here, let's stop and look at one of the examples of political hypocrisy and political misleading and taking advantage politically in a very cunning, low-level way. There are some who invented a battle which is called the Arsal village. They invented it in their imagination. They invented it and they spoke of it and they came out and wanted to defend the people of Arsal and the Arsal village. They said Arsal is a red line. They said the village of Arsal means it's a sectarian war. They said they spoke about what could happen to Lebanon and the region. But you're assuming in your imagination, in your devilish mind, you are assuming that there are some people, Hezbollah, or the people, the inhabitants of Baalbek and Hermel, or those in the neighborhood who want to fight or want to enter into Arsal village. But that's not the case. This is hypocrisy. Allow me at the beginning to speak with such clarity in order for the Lebanese to know what is happening, in order to know who really cares for the people, who really does not want to have a sectarian war or civil war in Lebanon, and who takes into consideration all the unique aspects, unique nature. On the other hand, for them to know who is inventing illusions and lies in order to revive themselves in a certain place and present themselves as a leader or a protector or anyone, even if it means sectarian mobilization. So, first of all, let's make it clear, we are not in the process of entering into this village. This village is the responsibility of the state and the Lebanese army. And I call on all those who are using this card for sectarian mobilization and political hypocrisy and political tricks, I call on them to put a stop to this. Second, thank God, yesterday the cabinet, at least when it comes to the village, I think the decision is clear. Now, if someone wants to explain clear issues in a different way, that's something else. But the outskirts, maybe someone could say it's clear, maybe someone could say no, it's a decisive decision. Some could say no, it could be explained in different ways. However, regarding the Arsal village itself, the decision of the cabinet yesterday was clear that the Lebanese army, for this reason, it said in the declaration that the Lebanese army must retake this village and protect it and defend it and enter into the village. So the issue now regarding Arsal village is no longer being debated politically. It's now exited the political debate. It is now the responsibility of the commanders, the leaders of the Lebanese army and the Lebanese army itself. So the people of that region look forward, they look to the Lebanese army generals, the Lebanese army commanders and the Lebanese army to take this very big responsibility. The issue is not small at all. It's not a trivial issue at all. That is the second point. I also think that point is clear and everybody is waiting for this decision to be implemented. Of course, the government is called upon to follow up with the Lebanese army in order to carry out this decision and to provide the army with all the means to achieve success. Now, regarding the issue of the Arsal outskirts, once again, if you recall, at the very beginning of the Qalamun battles, we said that after the snow melts, we have the mountains. Back then, people said, no, nothing will happen in Qalamun. This is only talk, this is only psychological warfare, and Hezbollah will not be able to take one step. And they also said Qalamun will be a graveyard for Hezbollah. All this talk which you heard, threats and pledges. Now, we went ahead in Qalamun, and by the way, what quickened the operation in Qalamun was the attack of the Takfiris against the positions of the Syrian army and the resistance. We were still preparing, so many were surprised when the battle began. Actually, the direct attack on the battlefield, it is what quickened the battle, quickened the operation. The same thing happened in Arsal. Before the Arsal outskirts, they said Arsal outskirts are a red line and Hezbollah will not have the courage, and the Arsal outskirts will be a graveyard for the invaders. First of all, we are not invaders, we are liberators, we are resistance fighters, this is our country. Second, look, all the talk which was said is worthless, just like Qalamun. And now the Mujahideen, the heroic fighters, those who I salute and who I express my appreciation towards and my love towards, and I confess, I must confess to their faith and to their courage and to their responsibility and their great sense of responsibility and their sacrifices. They sacrifice with martyrs and wounded, and they are fighting very deep in the outskirts, in the valleys, in the high mountains. And what made this operation take place quickly was the latest attack made by Al-Nusra, the Al-Qaeda affiliate in the Levant, the attack which was carried out against your people in the outskirts of Yunin and Nahle. This is what made the operation take place quicker, what made it take place sooner. So this is happening also in the same perspective from the beginning. How will it continue, its time frame, where will it be isolated to? Anyway, from Qalamun to the Arsal outskirts, we agreed that the battle will speak for itself. I won't go into details, I won't give you reports. The battle will speak for itself. The brothers over the past few days, they have taken tens of kilometers of Lebanese occupied territory in the Arsal outskirts. They were liberated with the arms of your brothers and your mujahideen in the Islamic resistance in Lebanon. And also, this important advance took place in the Flita outskirts, and what completes the Mousa mountaintop in the Thalaja mountains, meaning the achievements made over the past few days, I can assure you the military result says or implies that the achievements made over the past few days indeed, and without any room for debate, without any hesitation, your brothers in the resistance and in the Syrian army, they have the upper hand now, be it in the Qalamun outskirts or in the Arsal outskirts, due to the developments taking place on the battlefield. Now, on the sidelines of this battle, there are other issues which I must point out too. We said that if the state does not take up its responsibility, the people of Biqar will not abandon their responsibility. And indeed, over the past few days, the meetings which were held in Biqa and especially in many villages and cities in Baalbek Rimel between the families. All of these meetings sincerely reflected the convictions of the inhabitants of those areas. We followed these meetings, and of course this is what we know, and I thank them. I also thank them for taking responsibility and their vigilance, their understanding of the dangers and their readiness to stand and sacrifice. We, in the current phase, what we need is this solidarity, this popular support, and this moral support. Now we don't need fighters. We do not need fighters now. Your brothers in the Muqawma units, in the units of resistance, God willing, they have the quantity, quality, and human capability to achieve this goal, which you look forward to, which you called out for, which you believed in. What we indeed need in this current phase is this solidarity. What was said, also the same as what was said regarding entering Arsal. Some said that the people of Baalbek and Hirmil won't enter, and they quickly began to talk about popular mobilization. When did I mention popular mobilization? Are you that scared? It doesn't need popular mobilization up until now. It also doesn't require a state of alert or a general popular mobilization. As I said, our fighters in the resistance are capable of achieving this goal. So we are not in the process of putting together contingencies or a popular mobilization front, popular mobilization forces, and all those who express their support and solidarity and their positive stance, we thank them and we say in the end that the men and the heroes of the resistance who are fighting in the outskirts, in the mountains, in the positions, those who are in the mountains of Lebanon, who are they? They are the sons of these tribes and these families, of these villages. So this is also to clarify. This is in order to clarify. And of course, there is no doubt that the fight in the outskirts of Arsal will facilitate and lessen the burden on the Lebanese army, of course. And this will be a prelude that will greatly facilitate the steps which were officially requested, which the Lebanese army was officially requested to take. This is regarding Arsal. So the issue of Arsal is now clear. It doesn't need more discussion. We do not want to enter into the village. We don't want to approach the village. This is the responsibility of the Lebanese army and the state, and God willing, we hope they will take up this responsibility. The battle of the Arsal outskirts has begun, and it will continue until the goals are achieved, and we are not constrained by any time frame. Nobody should say hours, weeks, or months. This is something decided by the commanders on the ground, because what we want to do is achieve the goal with the least possible sacrifices, achieve the goal with the least possible sacrifices. Therefore, we are in no hurry, and we do have time. The time is open, and we are taking steps in accordance with this responsibility. The third main issue in the political category, the issue of the government. Two short sentences regarding the government. I sincerely hope from the ministers, from the political parties in the government, I sincerely hope they take issues seriously, in an appropriate, serious manner. Nobody should say this is something which we can delay or neglect, and I think that they should realize the seriousness of the situation and the sensitivity of the situation. And he who waits for some changes, if someone sits down and analyzes it, says no problem, we push this back down the road regarding the government and the issues it should take up. If someone believes they can push them down the road in a hope that things will change in Syria, Yemen, or Iraq or elsewhere, he who hopes in this way is mistaken and is pinning his hopes on nothing and wasting time of the country. The Lebanese cabinet must tackle certain issues and it must take its legal and constitutional responsibilities in addressing and following up all of these matters. And all issues must be taken in an appropriate, serious way without pinning hopes on any illusions. The fourth point, ISIL. Allow me, I'm obliged to speak a little about ISIL. What is strange is that since a year ago, since ISIL came to surface, it came to surface in Iraq, in Mosul. Before that, it hadn't taken complete control of Mosul. It did have a presence in Iraq because the place where ISIL was established is Iraq. It is the Islamic State of Iraq. It was called that then when they entered into Syria and when they seized Raqqa and parts of Deir ez-Zor province and Hasaka province, etc. Then its name changed to the Islamic State in Iraq and the Sham. And some of the media personnel gave an abbreviation of ISIL. But it began in Iraq. From that day, there was a lot of talk. Who invented ISIL? When the situation developed in Syria, we had more such talk. For example, because we are in an era of media misleading and political misleading, I am obliged to stop at this issue because we saw it even over the past few days and past few weeks. Meaning that when a suicide bomber in the village of Qudayh, in the Qatif area in Saudi Arabia, when he blew himself up in a mosque, one of the Muslim Shia mosques over there, and after that, when a similar attack took place on the gateway of a mosque, which was prevented by the heroic youth whom some of them martyred. After that, there was a lot of talk in the media inside Saudi Arabia, in the media outlets of the Gulf, in Lebanon, the region. They accused and they said, who stands behind ISIL? Iran. Imagine any sane person who comes and talks to you. Look at the era we live in. Iran, the Islamic Republic, which is accused of spreading Shiism and accused of not being concerned except with the Shia unjustly, and also accused of everything related to Shia and spreading Shiism. What do they say? They say, who is ISIL? Iran stands behind ISIL, and Iran is the one who controls ISIL, and it sent ISIL fighters to Shia mosques in Qatif or in Dammam in order to carry out these suicide attacks in order to bring about protests against the Saudi regime. Of course, this talk is based on no evidence. It is also contrary to logic, contrary to everything. The same. When these events took place in Iraq and Syria, then some said, who invented ISIL? Some of those, between brackets, those great people, said that Bashar al-Assad brought about ISIL and gave Raqqa and parts of Deir ez-Zor and parts of Hasaka to ISIL, and he enabled them to enter into the northern countryside of Aleppo because President Assad wants ISIL to strike the Syrian national opposition, which threatens the government. Now, even if one wants to produce a movie in Hollywood, he wouldn't come up with such a story. Imagine. And in Iraq, the same. I even read in some articles, how was ISIL established? Anyway, let me make you laugh, for these days are days of happiness and sadness at the same time. It's mixed. I read that a three-way meeting was held, Iranian, Syrian, Hezbollah meeting, in one of these articles, and it said that I was present and that the idea of establishing ISIL to strike al-Nusra and to strike the Syrian opposition was my idea. But even in my dream, such an idea wouldn't come to my thought. This is silly. And then articles are written and books are put together, media outlets devote airtime, and they put together these stories. If the sun rises, that means you're sleeping in your house. What has this have to do with that? This is how they behave. Introductions which have nothing to do with the results. But to clarify and to remind you, although this is something very, very clear and well known, ISIL, which means the Islamic State in Iraq and al-Sham and the Levant, it is, before, originally, it is al-Qaeda in Iraq. First of all, Abu something al-Muhajir, and then Abu Umar al-Baghdadi, and Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi, and then I don't know who. Consecutively, they took up the leadership of al-Qaeda in Iraq. It is the branch of al-Qaeda in Iraq. Until about 1.5 years ago, it was al-Qaeda. It had sworn allegiance to Osama bin Laden, and after Osama bin Laden, it swore allegiance to Ayman al-Zawahiri. The whole world knows that this group, its leaders, its agenda, its establishment, its branches, its financing, its relations, all of it is known. Now, after that, when they disagreed regarding Syria, that Syria be part of the emirate of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi or a separate emirate under the leadership of Ayman al-Zawahiri, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi then declared himself Amir and the Caliphate. So very clearly, ISIL is al-Qaeda. Originally, it split off from al-Qaeda because of an issue which is related to a disagreement about who will lead the process in Syria and about allegiance. Now, if ISIL is al-Qaeda, who doesn't know in the world, who doesn't know who established al-Qaeda? Was it Iran or Hezbollah or President Bashar al-Assad? Who? The whole world knows that he who established al-Qaeda is the CIA, meaning America, and the Saudi intelligence services, meaning Saudi Arabia, and the Pakistani intelligence services. This exists in books and documentations throughout the whole world. The whole world is full of these documents. It was put together, established in Afghanistan to fight the Soviet Union. So this is ISIL. This is where ISIL came from. You want to know where it was invented? Today, if I or anyone else, if we are in need of discussing this matter to remind people of the most obvious issues, ISIL is al-Qaeda, its origin is al-Qaeda, it is part of al-Qaeda. Just since 1.5 years ago, it was al-Qaeda, and then they disagreed regarding the leadership and the emirate. Nothing changed. Instead of the Amir being Ayman al-Zawahiri, the Amir became Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. That's the only thing that changed. Where is Iran here? Where's President Bashar al-Assad? Where's Hezbollah? Where's the others? Yes, sometimes they say, how did they seize control of Raqqa and Mosul? This is a battle. And in any government, you might find a military commander who is afraid in some area, a security official in one area who is also afraid, who is someone who's not courageous. There are places that have fallen in Iraq from the beginning of the events. There are some places that have fallen. But does this mean that the government or Iran or that the Iraqi government came and laid their foundations, established ISIL and gave them territories and said to them, rise and threaten the whole world? I think even children, if someone sits down and explains to children some of these obvious issues, even children won't accept such talk. ISIL is from the same origin, from the same American origin, and the Americans confess to this, the same American, Saudi, Pakistani origin. Some Gulf countries gave them great capabilities from the beginning. Then, after ISIL turned against its mother and father, it has its own project. This project is being taken advantage of, it's being protected, and is being financed as well, and its oil is being bought and sold, and providing it with manpower also is being facilitated. The last thing I want to say regarding ISIL is that the whole world, be it true or not, the whole world behaves as if ISIL is a threat to the whole world. They are no longer saying ISIL is threatening Syria or Iraq or Lebanon or the Christians or the minorities or I don't know who. No. Now, conferences have been held before, and just a few days ago a conference was held in Paris, and the whole world is behaving as if ISIL poses a threat to the world. But we in Lebanon, we are still obliged to come out and argue and to discuss this. Does ISIL pose a threat to Lebanon or not? Now, if Lebanon is not part of this world, okay, then it doesn't pose a threat. But if Lebanon is part of this world, then it's different. The situation is different. ISIL is here on your borders, the Arsal outskirts. It just so happens that the area we came from in Qalamun, you know, the Arsal outskirts in Qalamun are two parts. We have the southern territory towards the east and south, which is under the control of al-Nusra, whom we are fighting with. However, in the upcoming fight is against who? It's against the second, the western, northern areas, according to the map. These areas are under the control of ISIL. Now, ISIL is not present in Raqqa and Mosul, or even Tadmur only. It's here, present in the Arsal outskirts, above Ras al-Balbak, the Al-Qa projects, inside Lebanese territory. ISIL, which the whole world views as an international threat. So I sincerely hope that we can all help one another. Nobody should turn our attention away regarding identifying the enemy. He who is really fighting ISIL in this region, who is solidly, seriously fighting ISIL, are the same sides who are being accused of establishing and controlling ISIL, meaning the Islamic Republic in Iran, the brothers in Iraq, the brothers in Syria, we and those who are with us in Lebanon, they are the ones fighting ISIL. Regarding the others, they facilitate for ISIL in the media. They sell its oil and gas. They provide it with money. They open their borders so that the fighters can come in from all over the world. So they always turn over the facts. They always turn around the truth. Now, that's enough regarding the political issues. Now, I want to speak, or this is my last point regarding the political issues, the war on Yemen. Today is day number 72 since the beginning of this Saudi-American aggression. 72 days. Now, of course, we can say that it's strange or that it's normal. This international situation, this situation of the Arab and Islamic world, the same as it was from day one. We have those who support the aggression, we have those who are silent towards the aggression, be it countries, international organizations, international institutions, or governments, or peoples, or religious clerics, or religious centers, etc., etc. No stance, no condemnation, no expression, nothing. Bearing in mind that this aggression is very clear. I'd even like to further add, if there is any TV station or satellite television or political faction or any figure or magazine or newspaper which criticizes or objects to this aggression, look how democratic Saudi Arabia and its regime are. Look how much they can tolerate different points of view and criticism. If there is anyone who condemns or criticizes or objects, even in an objective manner, without using harsh language, then the Saudi regime uses all available tools, intelligence tools, security tools, political tools, pressure on media outlets, and also financial bribes, threats, in order to silence all voices, meaning the Saudi regime doesn't want anyone in this world to open his mouth and say one word, which reminds of the aggression and condemns the aggression, because they cannot tolerate even one word. And this is one example of the nature of the regime in Saudi Arabia. So we saw there were some media outlets who were stopped from broadcasting on certain frequencies, and some were given money. They stopped giving them money, and they gave some money. They said to some people, we'll give you money if you support the war. But if you are on the right side, if you are strong, why are you afraid? You have hundreds of media outlets. Are you afraid of one or two media outlets? You have thousands of pens. Are you afraid of one or two pens, meaning those who write articles? You have the whole world standing with you. Are you afraid of one or two countries because they are objecting to your war, your aggression, and your massacres? This reflects weakness, not strength. Now, this war, from our perspective, from day one, we spoke, our stance was clear, our stance has not changed. Every day our conviction increases regarding the righteousness of our stance. At every moment, every day, every hour, on every occasion, we condemn this Saudi American barbaric aggression on Yemen and on the people of Yemen and the civilization of Yemen and the past, present and future of Yemen. This is a stance which shall not change and will not decrease. The language will not decrease as long as this, the tone will not decrease as well as long as this aggression continues. And also from day one, we spoke out, and now it's day number 72. I once again, on day number 72, I say, yes, they killed, they destroyed, anyone can do this. Criminal terrorist gangs can do this. This doesn't require a state or a strong army. This is, does not reflect strength. Destroying and displacing, spilling the blood of people, women and children, that doesn't show strength. Let's put the killing and destruction aside. Out of all of the goals that were declared and the other goals which were declared, even the smaller goals which were announced then, in the restoration of hope. What was achieved out of all of his goals? Nothing. All of the high ceilings for their puppet, Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi, that he won't participate in dialogue, won't go to Geneva, unless the Yemeni, against those Yemenis exit the cities and the government centers and institutions. Now he and those who back him, they are obliged to go to Geneva without any preconditions, because there is no horizon to this war. And because the Yemeni army and the Yemeni people and the Yemeni revolutionaries, because they were up to the historic responsibility, they were up to the historic confrontation, because they have the determination, the will and the courage and the readiness for sacrifice, they were able to persevere for 72 days. At the time where this large-scale bombings and massacres were being committed under the eyes and ears of the whole world, but they did not weaken. And recently, I think, people saw the protests in Sana'a, the logic, the determination, the slogan, the present, the turnout. So, as I said, this war, as I said from the beginning, this war has no horizon, and Saudi Arabia and those who stand with Saudi Arabia must quickly open the door to political solution and lifting the siege and the stop of the aggression and give the opportunity, because more, a continued aggression will only lead to more losses and more retreat and more damage done to the stance of the Saudi regime. That will be enough for the political issue. Now I will speak about the cultural matters, the religious issues. Any TV station who wants any station who wants to say enough just with a political issue, that's okay. But I'm going to go now to the cultural matters.
All right, that was Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement, and he's speaking there live in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. He spoke about Israel holding drills, he said, which is a confession that the resistance can strike in all those places where those drills are taking place. He said the resistance does not fear war or threats. And he said the myth that the resistance is held up in the fight against ISIL is illogical. He said the resistance is ready for Israel. He spoke of Arsal village, around which there has been a lot of controversy in Lebanon itself. That village is occupied by Takfiri groups. He said it is the responsibility of the army to liberate it. He spoke about Hezbollah, and he said that though it is securing Arsal's outskirts on the borders, as is its duty, it is not planning on entering it, and he called on those increasing sectarianism through this issue of Arsal to stop that. He said the army and the government must act when it comes to Arsal, and he said that Hezbollah is not an invading force. He said that we are part of this country, i.e. Lebanon, and are liberators. He said the Syrian army and Hezbollah have the upper hand in the battle against terrorists, as proven by recent military achievements. He said those fighting on the Lebanese front are the sons of the same villages around the border. He said the Saudis, when it came to those attacks on the Shia mosques in the kingdom, he said Saudis blamed ISIL attacks on Shia mosques on Iran. And he said the narrative about ISIL's establishment as well is also ludicrous. He spoke about how ISIL is Al-Qaeda. Just a year and a half ago, he said they were the same, and then had a disagreement. He said, where do Lebanon, Hezbollah, Iran, or President Assad even come into this? He said U.S., Saudi, and Pakistani intelligence services, in fact, are behind the creation of Al-Qaeda. He said the whole world is acting as if ISIL is a threat to them. He said if Lebanon is also part of this world, then we must act. He said that he sincerely hopes that we can help one another in fighting the true enemy. And he said the same people fighting ISIL are the same ones being accused of, in fact, helping ISIL, such as, again, Iran, Hezbollah, etc. He spoke about Saudi Arabia and how it does not have democracy. He said that look at Saudi Arabia and the fact that no one can even object to any policies there, speaking about, of course, the Saudi aggression on Yemen. He said the Saudi regime doesn't want anyone to talk about their aggression. He said some media were even taken off satellites, and some were pressured into supporting the Saudi aggression on the country. He said the need to control the narrative, in fact, indicates weakness. He spoke about Hezbollah's stance as being clear. He said that we condemn the Saudi aggression on Yemen, and this will not change. Spilling the blood of innocents does not show strength. And finally, he said those who support Saudi Arabia must urge it to enter political dialogue immediately, because if this does not happen, the Saudi kingdom's reputation and image will be irreparably hurt. Again, that was Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah resistance movement, who is speaking there live in Beirut. Thanks very much for watching.